So glad to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Coming up in just a few minutes, you want a comparison shop for auto insurance? Good luck. It's today's Clark Rage. And later, I want to talk about the actual value on average of the level of education you have. What does the level of education from high school through to graduate degree, what does it do to your paycheck? I'm going to share some shocking comparisons for you, some surprising numbers. I want to talk right now about something that has become the thing, and that is subscriptions for services and products rather than paying for them as you buy them. It is a massive change in the economy. It is something that is a preferred method to do things for people that are in their 20s and 30s who are the key influencers today and how society works and commerce works. The levers of power are still heavily in the hands of older generations, but the power is migrating in the consumer sense to people that are younger. And one of the key things they want is not to have to own stuff. Now, we got an early look at this, at how Netflix destroyed the idea of owning video. I mean, it seems so long ago that people used to own movies. I mean, that's what people did. Or they bought entire seasons of TV shows. If somebody loved a show, let's say one of the most popular things on Netflix is Friends. And there are people who would go out and they'd buy these cases that had entire seasons of Friends or multiple seasons of Friends. And they'd be able to pop them in a DVD player. Now, Netflix paid, you probably have heard this a couple of months ago, they paid a reported $100 million to get the rights to continue to be able to show Friends for one more year, because apparently for a lot of people, one of their motivators to subscribe to Netflix is so they can watch Friends episodes. Again, paying a monthly fee that, depending on bare bones, can be like $8 on up for Netflix. And it taught industry that this is what so many people want now. And we are on the edge of an all-out revolution in the automotive market, where people will subscribe to car services instead of own a car or lease a car. As to how the ultimate economics of that will work out for you, it's going to take a while to figure out the economic models. But the models that I've told you about, I first started telling you about a year and a half ago with luxury brands, that you pay a monthly fee, a big one, and then you can drive pretty much any vehicle within their fleet and change them out regularly. Now, that's not for everyday people. But being able to pay a monthly subscription and have it include auto insurance and things like that, and you're free to ditch the subscription at any time, that is going to be a prominent way that people have transportation. And I'm somebody who likes to own things. Like, I have my own scooter, like the Lime or Bird. Probably not the smartest thing to have my own. Probably makes more sense to pay $1 a ride and 15 cents a minute, which is the common price point. but I like riding my own. I know how it performs and all that. And there are so many things that in my mind, it's like you own it. But one thing that's becoming clearer is not just because of the unaffordability of owning your own home. There are a lot of people who prefer the relative freedom of being a renter instead of owning a property you have to take care of. So this is a major transition in our economy. As we transition and people try to figure out the right price points and all the rest, know that you as a consumer need to think through before you just click yes. It's so easy to sign up for every kind of subscription possible. Just think through, is it something you're really going to use? And is the price really right for you and your budget? Stephen is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Clark. How you doing?
Wonderful, Stephen. How can I be of service to you?
I've been listening to you for quite a while now, and never really thought about retirement until about a year ago when I took your advice on saving and everything. So I cleared out my debt, and I have about $138,000 left on my mortgage.
You are pretty young to have no debt at all other than mortgage debt. And what's the value of the property?
Right now, the value is pretty high. It's probably about $255,000, $265,000.
So you already, in your early 30s, you have 50% equity in your home and no other debts?
No other debt at all.
You
so
are fantastic.
What I've been
awesome.
Struggling about... trying to figure out, should I try to tackle my mortgage and pay it off quickly, or should I put away more for my 401k retirement plan and just try to save as much as I can and pay my mortgage, as I've been doing it for the past 8 years, where I just pay the minimum amount.
So what is your mortgage? What's your mortgage interest rate, Stephen?
4.5.
4.5. So 4.5 puts you in a territory where the question would be, can you out-earn 4.5 over time in your 401k? And the odds are really good that you could earn more in the 401k over time than what you're going to pay on your mortgage at 4.5%. So you've got a very favorable mortgage interest rate, and it is a great feeling to be mortgage debt free. But if you, right, with 30 years left till traditional retirement age for you, socking as much money as you can in your 401k is really a great choice. Now, I got a question for you before you ask me your next question, Stephen.
Okay.
Does your employer offer you a choice between a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k, or they only offer,
yeah,
they do offer both?
They offer both. And right now what I'm doing is I'm doing only the traditional, and I'm contributing about 16% of it.
Oh, man, I love you. You are an incredible saver. So what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to put a little more pinch on your wallet and stop doing the traditional and instead do the Roth.
Okay. What they're doing right now is with the traditional, they're matching 75% for the first 4% and then 25% of the next 4%. They match a total of 8%. I wanted to know if I should just go down to the minimum and just contribute the full, maybe that full 8%. And then just go with Roth and contribute as much as I can, because by June of next year, I'll be grossing almost $70,000 a year. So I'll be able to do about 20% total contribution.
All right, so let's stop for a second. They will still do a match if you do the Roth 401k. That doesn't change. The match they do goes into the traditional side. but they'll still do that match for you. That will not change anything about them matching. So it's really great for you to build up two piles, a pre-tax pile and a post-tax pile of money. Because when you hit retirement, having both piles is really valuable for money management later. Now, if you do, let's say you even stay where you are at 16%, which is outstanding that you're doing that. If you do the 16 and you do it in the Roth, that means you're doing after tax. So essentially, you will have raised your contribution effectively to the 20% you were thinking of doing at some future date anyway. But I would make that change and I would do the Roth 401k and do that as a higher priority than paying down on the mortgage. If you're able to do 16% though, and you realize you still have surplus money and you want to accelerate paying on the mortgage, go for it. I'm really impressed with you. You've set a financial plate for yourself that is a great meal and you're saving an enormous amount. You have minimal debt. And you have great freedom in front of you because of those choices you've made. And I'm going to mess up your name. Is it Rayan?
No, it's Ryan.
Ryan. Oh, it's just a misspell on the computer. I'm sorry, Ryan. I got to tell you, I'm looking at R-A-Y-N for your name.
Oh, no, it's Ryan. How you doing, Clark?
How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Good. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I've been with you about 15 years, so you're like my hero.
Well, you were kind. Thank you.
Oh, I got two quick, easy questions for you.
Ready.
All right. The first question. Because I am Clark Smart and kind of cheap, I need some new checks for my personal checking account. And my credit union wants to charge me $21 for 100 checks. And
that doesn't sound very much like a co-op owned by its members. 21
right?
bucks?
I didn't think that was a good deal. So I know in the past you've talked about where to find checks. And if you could be so kind to let me know what you suggest, that'd be great.
Okay, so first thing, Sunday newspapers. You still have a Sunday newspaper anywhere near you?
I do.
All right, so in the Sunday newspaper, they will have, you'll see coupons for getting checks cheap first time.
Okay.
And we don't write enough checks anymore. So you get, let's say, 250 checks from one of those Sunday glossy coupons. It should last you many, many years. And checks now are so inexpensive ordering from one of those services. Probably somewhere in the range of maybe $5, let's say.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And also, if you're a Sam's Club member or a Costco wholesale member, they also sell checks to members. And they're 100% of the time, they're cheaper than what you're going to pay for checks ordering them when a credit, I can't believe a credit union is charging that much, but a credit union or a bank is treating checks as a profit center, selling you checks.
They truly are. I thought that was a lot of money.
That is an insane amount of money. And
okay.
So it should be really easy for you to find a deal. Are you a member of either of the warehouse clubs?
Oh, for sure. Costco.
Okay. So you can see at Costco's website what their cheapest checks are. And I think they're about half of what it is. And if you're a premium Costco member, you get an additional 20 or 25% discount on check orders.
I really appreciate that very much. My other question, if you got time, I'll keep it quick.
Okay.
Do you have a book coming out and a book tour coming up anytime soon?
No more books.
Oh, Clark, come on.
Nope. I wrote 10. I was fortunate to be on New York Times bestseller list 3 times and number one once, but the market has moved on, and that's why Clark.com, we have new stuff every day, and we now have 24 writers on it because you want new content constantly. That's what the marketplace wants, and that's taken the place of me having to go on six-month book tours and never see my family. And they look at a picture of me, and that's how they remember what I look like.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
You're not going to believe this. A new report out that only 1 in 4 people who shop around for auto insurance, like I recommend you do, have been successful buying new auto insurance online. The industry is intensely hostile to you shopping around, except for the small number of insurers who specifically push you towards shopping around, like Geico and Progressive. And it is a fear in the industry that people will become price-oriented and they're not going to measure up at most insurers. So I believe that the stubbornness and the fear of old-line auto insurers being afraid is going to lead to a much better model for you buying insurance. And it's going to be buying insurance on an app on your phone. And if the old line players don't want to play, new ones are going to continue to emerge that are going to make it possible for you to buy insurance as you need it or buy it by the mile. I know this is weird, but the marketplace will much better be supported and pricing will be more obvious and more competitive when auto insurance ultimately is sold by the mile. And we're not far from that point, and it will be a great day when it happens. It's my pleasure to have you with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about your empowerment with knowledge so you can save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. You got a question for me, you can go to clark.com/ask and post away, and we'd love to answer your questions. So there's a real movement today to try to discourage people from getting a college degree. There's more and more talk about how people who get a college degree are having a hard time finding jobs that you even need a college degree for. And it's a real backlash against the traditional four-year college experience. And I want to tell you there's more nuance to this than this react going on. First, I want to share with you new data from the U.S. Census. And it shows that the earning power you have per year for everybody who has college degree, high school degree, whatever. This is average, so don't compare yourself to this. This is showing the relative earnings of people based on education. So let's start with somebody who gets an advanced degree, a master's or some other form of graduate degree. They average 95 grand per year, according to the census. The average person with a college degree averages a whisker under 70,000. The average person who has some college, which, you know, a lot of people go to college, don't finish. They go for a year or two, maybe, and then they life happens and they're not going to college anymore. Listen to the difference. So if the average person who's got the four-year degree earns almost 70, the average person who just has some college earns 40. A massive credential gap. And it's in the Life's Not Fair department. There's a lot of people who've had some college have learned really great stuff, and their earning power should not be crushed that much, but that's what the marketplace says. How about if you have a high school diploma? little more than $35,000 a year. So the big gap, there's some gap between high school and some college, but the big gap is between some college and getting the degree. And that is a giant difference. It is another leap from the college degree to graduate school, but the biggest one by far is some college versus a college degree. So where does all this lead me to? Not everybody is college material. It's not your thing. It may not be of interest to you. But virtually everybody will benefit from getting a skill, from getting a trade. And there are jobs that pay very well when you have that skill or trade. But there's a new factor. It's not really new, but it's one that people are not grabbing hold of. And that is, historically in America, different than a lot of people in Western Europe, we have really had a fixation that you gain your education from your late teens to your mid-20s, and then you're done with education. But education today, because of the changes in the workplace, the changes in jobs, education and training need to be looked at as a long-term, lifelong pursuit. And dropping out of college in particular should not be the terminus of it. If it means you didn't find it relevant, it didn't work for you, so go to trade school, or apprentice programs aren't as big in this country as they are other places, but that's something you can look at too. And money's not everything. I know a lot of people who in middle age got a particular skill when they were young, specifically because it paid well, but they're miserable. Do what you love. Do what you love. It's what educators refer to as the intersection, where you do what you love, but you also look for where doing what you love can also generate a paycheck. It can do it a lot more than you realize. It's not as obvious as, oh, I'm studying to be an electrical engineer, or I'm studying to be this, that, or the other. But there are many possibilities when you do pursue what you love. Denise is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Denise.
Hello. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, thank you. How can I serve you?
Well, you were just speaking to the choir about the education. I spent 15 years getting my education one class at a time while I homeschooled my kids off and on. But
how are they doing?
Oh, they're doing great. Yeah, my youngest son is in his last 2 years of high school now.
Great. Okay, I've got a little more to run with my youngest. He's a seventh grader.
Oh, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I managed to graduate with my bachelor's degree and then with my master's, one class at a time, and landed a good, stable job with the Air Force. And as I started earning a living wage, I went to my local credit union. They have a retirement finance counselor there. And I asked them for advice on how I should start preparing for retirement because I'm starting so late in the game. And I was a little disappointed because his advice was essentially, just save as much as you can. That's all I can tell you. And I thought, no, there's got to be something more that I could do because I don't really have the time on my side to do the compounding interest. And so I have a real estate license on the side. Although I don't work in that field at all. I mostly got it because I'm really interested in real estate, and I've always had a kind of in the back of my mind that I'd like to invest at some point. But I was wondering if you had any advice for somebody starting late into the game for those of us who are late bloomers.
Well, let's talk this through. So are you a civilian employee of the Air Force, or are you a contractor?
I am a civilian employee of the Air Force, sir.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your service. And I want to tell you that that makes you eligible for the TSP.
Yes.
And the TSP is the greatest retirement plan that we have as Earthlings. It's fantastic.
Well, that's very good to hear.
And so you can pursue this other interest in real estate, but the thing I want you to do is start it with the amount you can feel you can afford in your budget in the TSP, but I want you to keep stepping up the amount you contribute. Because the TSP has the lowest cost of any retirement plan any of us could possibly have. It's extremely well managed. And because you're a civilian employee, you get a match, correct?
Correct. Up to 3% we get dollar for dollar, and then the next 2% is 50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, but doing 5%, which would pick up all the match money, that's not going to be enough for you. How much are you putting in at this point as a percent?
At this point, I'm doing 5% because I'm paying off all of my consumer debt. I figure I can't get a better return than not paying 18-19% on credit cards. So
true to a point, but I would like you to, I'm going to ask you to do a stretch, okay?
Okay.
I'd like you every 6 months to step up the amount you're contributing to TSP 1%.
Oh, sure.
Because we don't notice it in little increments like that, and you can stay on your path to pay down on the credit card debt.
That makes sense.
In addition, on the credit card debt, you said you're a credit union member.
Yeah.
Do they offer a balance transfer that would get you a lower interest rate on that debt?
Actually, I already did that, and okay. I've almost paid off that credit card.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I only have about $3,000 left. I started at about $42,000.
Good job.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it feels pretty good. I sense the shackles falling off now.
Wonderful. So in that TSP, as soon as you finish paying off that debt, step it up more than just a percent or two. Because what you need starting later, you do have to devote more of your paycheck to building money as a war chest for retirement than someone who started younger. And so just
right.
Keep on going till you get to the maximum eventually that you can contribute to the TSP each year and go into the life cycle fund that's appropriate for your age.
I'm already in that one. That's, I'm actually already in that one.
That's the right thing for you to do. So that's the most important thing. If in addition to that, if you have the energy and the time and you want to pursue doing real estate on the side, go for it. They work. I mean, it's different kinds of ways of creating more wealth over time or more income in the current time. But the TSP is where I want your efforts really concentrated. And congratulations to you for what you did raising all these kids, homeschooling them, and getting all that education for yourself. You should be really proud of what you've done. Millard is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Millard. How are you?
Hey, Millard. Hey, Clark. It's great to talk to you finally.
Great to have you here. Millard, I understand you're aggravated with how I praise credit unions all the time. Is that accurate?
Well, kind of. I've heard you go on rants about the evil mega banks.
No, the giant monster mega banks.
Exactly. And I couldn't agree more. I'm proud to say that I'm with a small locally owned bank with less than a dozen branches and very, very happy. They've been great to me. But here in my community, which is a metropolitan area of nearly a million people, we're dominated by a mega credit union, and it's very, very hard to get away from them. The smaller credit unions are farming off some of their services to the large credit union so that we get caught in the same loop of no customer service that the big banks have been offering for years.
You are bringing up a very valid point. Credit unions are going through kind of an awkward adolescence right now. And it's for a specific reason. the credit union industry is having to pivot because people who are in their 20s and 30s only want to do banking on their smartphones. And setting up really, really sophisticated apps requires huge money. And a lot of smaller credit unions don't have enough funds to super serve the people in their 20s and 30s who were never going to bank like maybe I did growing up. And so the credit unions are having to bulk up. And as they become larger, or as they go into these cooperative efforts with other credit unions, they become more bureaucratic and not as personal as the experience people have been used to.
Well, the problem that I had with the large credit union was that I left them because of problems servicing my mortgage. And I refinanced at a much better rate a couple of years ago to my local credit union, only to find out that my local credit union was outsourcing all of the service for the mortgage loans to the mega credit union.
So when you talk about a mega credit union, there's only one ginormo credit union in the country. That's another Clark term. And that is Navy Federal. But even Navy Federal is like 1/25 the size of one of the giant monster mega banks. So I support that you are letting your feet walk to where you are happy and where you're getting the best service. And that's a great decision on your part. And, you know, credit unions, the way they're structured, are going to be generally a better choice than a bank. But credit unions are not a monolith. They can be good ones, bad ones, and in between, just like there are with banks. Mike is with us on the Clark Howard Show. And Mike, I understand that you are a proud member of Team Clark and that you're going to protect your fellow listeners from some form of scam. Is that right?
Yes, we have got phone calls at our home, and I've got them on my cell phone and everything else from these places wanting to fix your computer.
Oh.
And, I mean, they call 8:30 in the morning, and it's like, oh, we want to repair your computer, or this or that, and every time you call them, and I don't know what they want to do. My dad and I just hang up on them, or tell them we don't have a computer. But I got a phone call one time on my laptop, and this thing is just almost new out of the box. And he said, oh, he said you put Microsoft Office on there, and he said there's something wrong with the server, and it can cause the thing to crash, and this, that, and the other. And of course, they want to charge money.
Oh no, it's much worse than them charging money. Let me tell you.
Well, they want to charge money to fix this thing, you know? And it's like, well, there's nothing wrong with it, and if I have any problems, I'll call Apple. You know, it's just, but you get some of these older people or something, and they'll fall for that stuff.
No, not just older people. This scam has been so popular, Mike. Let me put it a different way. It's been very successful at stealing people's money, but even worse, locking down their computers, and then you have to pay what's known as ransomware to get your own computer back working.
Yeah. Well, that's what this one guy said on the internet. He said my computer's now a paperweight. You know, he said it's just ridiculous.
So let me say something about this just for your fellow listener. What they do is they actually convince you that they're going to fix the computer, and they ask you for certain information that allows them to seize control of your computer remotely. And that's when they predicted the future, because then they make your computer a paperweight and put deadly viruses on it. Don't engage any of these people in conversation. Do just what you've been doing. Hang up the phone and avoid the crooks. This is the Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.